You may have seen environmental scientist Josh Byrne's backyard through his work as a presenter on Gardening Australia. He's a previous guest on this show, but today we're dragging him indoors and out of the garden. We're talking to him about his house because it's a fancy one. It's rated 10 stars for energy efficiency, and it's the only house in Australia where you and I can log on and look at the house's temperature, energy and water use in real time via the website. And I've just checked, it's 20 degrees in there, so that seems nice. Josh joins us this morning with Gemma Green. She's a member of Curtin University's research team helping to develop these new energy efficient technologies. Good morning to you both. Josh, why have you installed a Fitbit on your house?
Well, to be honest, I like exposing myself for the benefits of research, of course. And look, for a long time, I've been on about the fact that high-performance homes that use less power and less water should be more common. They're available now, so I built one, and I'm now sharing the data to prove that it works.
And so sharing the data, presumably, is partly about kind of naming and shaming. I mean, people will only want to log on and find out how much water your family's using if they suspect you of misusing water.
Well, it's more about, you know, showing a home that looks like most others up and down the street, but it's been designed with a lot of thought. And then, of course, we're a fairly typical family, two adults, two kids. And, you know, it's really about showing that with a bit of sensible behaviour, but most importantly, a well-designed home, that homes can use a lot less power and water and be much more affordable to run.
So what's that information that we can see online? Temperature, energy and water use, is that...
And in fact, it gets broken down into much more detail too as you dig down into it. But certainly temperature inside versus outside, and you can see that on a 24-hour trend or over the course of the week. And now even across the full year, there's 12 months worth of data in that database. So you can jump on... And in real time, you can see also the humidity, how our rainwater tanks are going, how much power we're using across the different circuits in the house, so where the power's being used, and of course also the same for water and where that water's coming from. Is it mains water, rainwater or grey water?
So, Gemma, how are you going to use the information when it comes back to you?
We've already used quite a bit of it in order to size the battery system. Josh had a whole year's worth of energy production data from his solar panels and consumption data within his house. And so we could see that over the course of 1 year, although his solar panels were generating around 76% surplus electricity to his household's needs, he was still only using the solar energy for 44% of his household's needs. And that's because most of the consumption was in the nighttime. So he was still like 55% reliant on the grid. So we use that to size the battery system that we've since installed.
Well, I was going to say, so that while the solar panels were an original feature, the storage thing is a new development. Talk us through that storage approach.
Initially, when we designed the home, we sized up solar panels that would offset the amount of power that we use. So obviously with standard rooftop solar power, you're generating power during the day and that's available for use. But then of a night time or during cloudy periods when there's not much sunlight, you're still relying on the grid. And I guess a typical leading edge approach to design these days is to be what we call net zero energy. That is, we produce more power from solar panels than the house uses across the course of the year. But as Gemma mentioned, we're still relying on grid power of a night time. So there's a cost with that, but also there's a greenhouse gas and emission impact of that from the fact that most of our power is generated by fossil fuels. So the idea of bringing battery storage into the equation means that we can actually store some of that solar energy so it's available to use at night time. And this is obviously emerging technology. It's exciting. And in the spirit of our house being a living laboratory, Gemma chose our place for her research trial.
So Gemma said 44% of the electricity to the house was coming from panels before the battery. What's the breakdown now?
Well, 44% of power still being sourced from the solar panels.
Yep.
But only 3% is being sourced from the grid and the rest is being sourced from the battery.
That's fantastic. So that's...
It's a very dramatic shift.
Over half of it is living in the battery. So is it expensive, that kind of battery system? Because that's kind of been the sticking point on this kind of development for a few years now.
The price of batteries has come down very significantly in a similar way to that of solar panels in the past decade. And the system that we've installed in Josh's house was $12,000, including installation. But the prices are coming down further and further. And the research that we've been doing on electricity pricing in the southwest in Perth indicates that by 2016 or 2017, there'll be around an 8-year payback period for installing batteries in houses.
I'm assuming, Gemma, if this was a conspiracy theory film, electricity suppliers would be terrified of you and be trying to shut you down. This technology must put the fear of God into them.
You're right. It's considered a disruptive innovation, and part of the research is also looking at the response from the utilities. They can fight, as you say. They can flight or innovate. Fighting takes the form of lobbying. Flight takes the form of either selling out of their investments or doing nothing. And innovate means get on board and being a part of the new energy system. And we're already starting to see energy utilities offering solar and battery systems to be a part of the kind of new energy paradigm.
Now, I'm interested. I know, Gemma, you're working on another groundbreaking solar project to do with solar technology being applied to apartment or strata blocks. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Sure. In Australia, we have more than 1.4 million houses with rooftop solar, and that's having double-digit growth each year, even with a very low feed-in tariff. But in spite of that, there's actually very little by way of solar deployment in strata, and there are a number of reasons for that. But one of them is often they're investor-owned and tenant-occupied, and as a result of that, investors or owners are reluctant to install solar technology because it's the tenant that receives the benefit for them. So we looked at how could we create a match between who pays and who benefits. And we've developed a governance framework for solar and batteries to sit on the strata in a microgrid. So the strata company maintains a solar and battery system, and then there's a submeter to each of the dwellings, and the tenants pay their electricity bill to the strata company instead of to the utility. So it provides an additional revenue stream to the owners on top of rent.
I mean, it's fascinating watching the speed with which new innovations are being announced in this space, particularly with solar. One of the ones that we're seeing a lot of is to do with the aesthetic, clear solar panels built into roofs. Josh, have you been following those developments?
Look, indeed, and technology is moving so fast in the energy space in general, particularly with solar technology and batteries, as Gemma has mentioned. So, you know, it's an exciting time to be in this space. You know, change is happening, so it's time for the utilities and more broadly the community to be part of that process.
So, you know, there's a lot of discussion about where very big in this country, particularly our political leaders, with talking about the aesthetics of renewable energy. But strangely, less about solar panels than about wind farms and things. How much when you're building a house, Josh, like you've just done with this project, and it's really important to you that it delivers on a whole lot of things, did you worry about the aesthetic, or were you worried about best practice before aesthetic?
Well, in terms of solar panels themselves, I mean, I actually find them quite a sexy statement. And for that matter, on the record, same with wind turbines. I think they're a great iconic symbol of a clean, renewable energy future.
Oh, I couldn't agree
more.
But
in terms of the overall house, we were very mindful that aesthetics are a key part of delivering a product that's going to be desirable to other people. So we designed the home. In fact, we built two homes, both on a 10-star energy efficiency performance sort of rating. We designed both homes to look like many others up and down the street, a similar vernacular of the suburb. They were built out of locally used materials, mainstream materials, mainstream construction techniques. The idea was not to freak people out. They were intentionally not designed as sort of left of centre eco homes. And that's very important to show that this stuff can be mainstreamed. Now, when it comes to aesthetics, obviously, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. In this case, we feel that they look and are appreciated like typical homes. But the important thing is they perform very differently.
So I just don't want to move on past that statement of 10-star without double-checking where the 10 stars come from. Can you just add stars willy-nilly, or who determines that 10th star?
The star rating scheme that I'm referring to is the Nationwide Household Energy Rating Scheme, or NATHERS, and that is the energy rating scheme that's required as part of a new home building approvals as part of the Building Code of Australia. And it's required in all states. It's a scale of 0 to 10, and it specifically relates to the thermal performance of a home. That is, how much energy is required to make it thermally comfortable year-round. in recognition of the fact that heating and cooling is the biggest energy user in a typical Australian household. So with our house project, obviously, hitting 10 stars was an important statement. But of course, we've gone much further than that. We've also looked at energy efficiency in the overall running of the household in terms of appliance selection, lighting and the like, how we heat our hot water through solar hot water heating, but then also how we generate our own power, as I've mentioned, and now storing it, but also water efficiency. So we harvest and use and then recycle most of our own water through rainwater harvesting and grey water reuse, all commonly available technologies now. We also have designed the homes to be socially inclusive through being universal access design in terms of being available for use for people with mobility challenges. We've also designed them to have good indoor air quality through low VOC paints and furnishings. Again, all commonly available stuff these days. But the idea is that we've brought them all together in a system that works. So all of those features are what I really see as being an important part of an overall sustainable household.
I've been speaking with Josh Byrne. You can catch Josh, of course, on Gardening Australia on ABC TV, and Gemma Green from Curtin University. We've got some photos of Josh's house, including the solar battery, up on the Blueprint for Living homepage, and a link to the live data coming out of the house, so you too can give Josh 10 stars. I'm Michael Williams. You're listening to Blueprint for Living on RN. In a tick, we're going to hear about cruises for opera lovers, and I taste an amazing falafel. That's right. A falafel.